Today on Annenberg Radio News.
Their lives were disrupted. In a lot of ways, we can talk about a lost generation.
We learn about L.A. County's controversial role in a Mexican deportation more than 70 years ago. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, February 21st, 2012. I'm Emily Frost. The former Miramonte Elementary School teacher accused of lewd acts with students was in court today for the first time. As Andrea Kowalczyk reports, he entered a plea of not guilty.
Mark Burnt sat silently, staring straight ahead in a packed courtroom. Five sheriff's deputies surrounded him. The former teacher appeared unkempt and unshaven in an orange jumpsuit. Burnt is being held at the Twin Towers Jail. His public defender, Victor Acevedo, accused the sheriff's deputies of refusing to give Burnt a razor to shave. He also told the judge the deputies are broadcasting Burnt's location on a loudspeaker to other inmates and calling him a child molester. Outside the courthouse, Acevedo told reporters about his concerns.
The concern is for his personal safety. We cannot have the sheriff's department deputies acting in such a way to essentially put a bullseye on his head, so to speak. So that is my concern.
Sheriff's spokesman Steve Whitmore says the department hadn't heard of the allegations until today's arraignment. He says the department will investigate the claims. High-profile attorney Gloria Allred, representing one of the alleged victims, worried about the allegations as well as the media surrounding the case.
I think we all have a stake in making sure that the defendant has a fair trial. That's very important. Both, I'm sure, to the defense, to the prosecution, most of all to the alleged victims. And hopefully nothing will interfere with that so that he would not have then grounds for appeal if, as and when he were convicted.
Burnt is facing 23 counts of lewd acts. He is alleged to have photographed students being bound and gagged and with a white liquid believed to be his semen. Burnt's attorneys requested today that the prosecution turn over every photo it has in evidence, something the district attorney is reluctant to do. Spokeswoman Sandy Givens says the defense will get all the photos involving victims already identified in the case. The judge will look at the other photos in private to determine if the defense has a right to view them.
The judge has agreed to look in camera at other photographs that the defense said they want, but at this point in time, it's either unidentified children or children who are identified later.
Gibbons declined to say whether there will be any new charges as other children are identified. The preliminary hearing is scheduled to take place on March 28th. Andrea Kowalczyk, Annenberg Radio News.
The surviving daughter of a South LA woman charged with drowning her two small children is still on life support this afternoon. But as Logan Healy reports, her father plans to stop artificial measures keeping her alive and donate her organs.
5-year-old Marion Take remains on life support at Children's Hospital Los Angeles, where she has been in a coma since her mother, Lorna Valle, allegedly attempted to drown her. False reports surfaced last night that the girl had been removed from life support and her organs donated. The false reports came after Valle's husband, Jose Lopez, told KABC News last night that he had decided to take Marion off life support so her organs could be donated for transplant. Valle's attorney, Luis Carrillo, told Annenberg Radio this afternoon that Marion would remain on life support only until doctors are able to remove her organs. The girl's 1-year-old sister, Lindsay Take, was pronounced dead shortly after arriving at the hospital last Wednesday morning. Firefighters found the children unresponsive when they arrived at the home on West 50th Street. Valle is being held by LAPD for the murder of her younger daughter and the attempted murder of the older girl. When Marion dies, Valle will face a second charge of murder. Valle's cousin, Luis Padillas, told KTLA News Valle was denied treatment for her severe depression at a local hospital because she is an undocumented immigrant. Padillas said Valle wanted to return to her native country of Guatemala. LA Weekly reports the family is seeking negligence charges against the hospital. Valle is being held on a $1.5 million bail and faces 50 years to life if convicted. Police are still investigating the case. Logan Healy, Annenberg Radio News.
Job hunting isn't easy for any of us right now, but the U.S. Supreme Court has stepped in to help day laborers who are taking to the streets to find work. Julia Deng reports.
Supreme Court justices have turned down an appeal from the city of Redondo Beach. That means the city cannot arrest people soliciting work on street corners. The National Day Laborer Organizing Network, ENDALON, celebrated the victory at its National Assembly this morning.
This is actually pretty monumental. It sets a precedent to across the country that day labor corners are open for business.
That's Marisa Franco, one of the network's campaign coordinators. She was joined by a former day laborer, Maria Marroquin, who also applauded the court decision.
I believe all this is going to be one of the brights or the brilliant part of our history in upholding the rights of the people who just trying to find a better life.
However, ENDALON's legal director, Chris Newman, says finding work isn't the only problem for these people.
50% of all day laborers have gone to work at least one time and not been paid, so they've been victims of wage theft.
The city of Redondo Beach claims drivers are the ones being victimized. They say up to 75 workers crowd busy intersections, and allowing them to solicit work on streets has caused major traffic problems. Marisa Franco isn't fazed and is looking forward to building on today's victory.
Following this, we're going to continue to, you know, expand worker centers, which for us are actually living symbols of legalization from the bottom up.
Lawyers for Redondo Beach could not be reached for comment. Julia Dang, Annenberg Radio News.
With a badly broken immigration system in the United States, many immigrants are falling victim to fraudulent schemes. Today, local congressional representatives held a news conference to warn immigrants about the problem. Devin Altschul reports.
Los Angeles Congressman Xavier Becerra told a story about Aaron, who is a U.S. citizen and has a father who needed immigration services. His father was approached by a man who claimed to be a lawyer and paid him $500 for his services.
The day came for his hearing. This individual never showed up. He was not an attorney. He had stolen the information, identity theft, of this attorney, and Aaron's father lost his $500.
Stories like this happen all the time, which is why immigration advocates met in downtown Los Angeles this morning to raise awareness and talk about the Family Unity Waiver the Obama administration is planning to implement. Representative Judy Chu describes the problems that the new initiative plans to alleviate.
Currently, the law requires that people that enter the country without deportation must leave the country while their spouse petitions for a green card. But once they leave, they can be actually kept out of the country for up to 10 years unless they secure a hardship waiver.
The Family Unity Waiver will permit families to stay together during the immigration process by allowing spouses and children to apply for a green card in the United States. The new waiver process will begin later this year. In the meantime, the fear that getting a green card will require 3 to 10 years outside of the country has caused immigrants to trust scam artists, charging large fees for help with their immigration status. The Coalition for Human Immigration Rights of Los Angeles doesn't want immigrants to fall for scams. Here is Angelica Salas of CHRLA.
We have already seen notarios, bad attorneys telling people that they can make them, that you can actually make use of this Family Unity Waiver. It hasn't even been moved forward. There's an amazing intention, and this is the right thing to do, but we want to make sure that you know that we will let you know when it's available for your use.
The news conference drew a crowd of people asking how to get their own help, proving that as more knowledge and resources are made available, the more immigrants and families can be helped. Devin Altschul, Annenberg Radio News.
And now for the weather. We'll have clear skies tonight with a low of about 52. More spring-like weather tomorrow and a little bit warmer. The high will be around 78. The sunny weather should continue into Thursday with highs in the 70s and lows in the 50s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we speak with an LA economist about the status of the city's economic recovery. When you think of tap dancing, you probably think Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire. In honor of Black History Month, Jessica Koslow takes us to a nonprofit in South Central Los Angeles where kids are learning a different style of tap dancing called hoofing.
What does Black History Month sound like? At the Youth Services nonprofit, A Place Called Home, in South Central Los Angeles, it sounds something like this. Every Friday in February, girls ages 8 to 13 show up and learn to hoof. Looking out at them are tap masters Gregory Hines and Savion Glover, whose magazine pictures hang on the wall. Dance coordinator Jewel Deligal, who holds the workshop, has a long history with tap. It was the first job she ever had. She worked on the film Tap when she was 14. Her dance department also offers classes in Afro Samba, ballet, jazz, yoga, hip-hop, capoeira, and hula, each weekday afternoon from 4 to 6:30.
Well, hoofing is, I would say, is a little bit more old school. It's more organic. It's like the street versus the stage. For example, even though Greg Hines was a show tapper in the sense of he was the celebrity, he really organically was a hoofer. The piece that I showed them was a piece that I had learned from Henry Letang, who's one of the original choreographers who's also a hoofer.
A Place Called Home is located on the corner of South Central Avenue and 29th Street. It's a safe haven for kids to play and learn after school and in the summer. This week, Deligal is teaching something a little more traditional, like you might see on Broadway.
Tap was my first love, and I just love tap.
Next month, some of her A Place Called Home dancers will be performing at Nokia Theater. Jessica Koslow, Annenberg Radio News.
LA County supervisors today discussed whether to give an official apology to Mexican Americans for the county's role in Mexican repatriation. During the Depression of the 1930s, LA County deported millions of people. They were sent home by train to Mexico. Cal State LA professor Francisco Balderrama wrote a book about this chapter in history. He says Angelenos are unaware of the county's involvement in the mass deportations.
They did not really have an understanding that this occurred throughout the United States, nor did they understand that Los Angeles played such a key role that it became kind of the model about how to do that.
The significance of this Mexican deportation has gone fairly unnoticed even in the Mexican community. Balderrama says the lives of the families were changed dramatically.
This is quite an emotional thing for them. Their lives were disrupted. In a lot of ways, we can talk about a lost generation. Many of these people found themselves in Mexico, which was a foreign country to them. A lot of them went to schools here in which to speak Spanish. They were punished, and they found themselves in Mexico unable to speak the language.
Balderrama says the impact of an apology may only reach a small community, but, he says, it's key in acknowledging the role Los Angeles played in the deportations. 2012 began with good economic news at the national level. The U.S. unemployment rate dropped 0.2% to 8.3% in January. Nearly 250,000 jobs were added. But what about in Los Angeles? I spoke with Chief Economist for the Los Angeles County Economic Development Corporation, Robert Kleinhens, about his forecast for the city.
Well, in 2011, the LA County economy saw job gains, but they were just a fraction of the percent gains that we saw at the state level. Nevertheless, we'll take the growth where we can get it, and we saw growth take place last year in private education, also in information, which includes motion pictures, television production, and the internet, also in the leisure and hospitality, hotels, tourism, that sort of thing. So all of these were good signs that the economy is on the mend, and that same lineup of sectors of the economy should see gains again in 2012. But health services is one that grew throughout the recession and continues to grow, so that's good.
What about Farmers Field?
The fact of the matter is, I think we're a long ways away from really getting a sense of what will actually materialize there. So it's a little bit hard to gauge.
And do you think that it will continue to draw real estate development downtown?
We're seeing some action in terms of the building of hotels, certainly with LA Live coming on board in the last couple of years. That's been a welcome development. But beyond that, we're expecting that the Grand, Wilshire Grand, is going to be be redeveloped over the next few years. There's a new hotel that's planned for Broadway, on Broadway in downtown L.A. The Broad Museum of Contemporary Art is also currently under construction. So there are a lot of developments taking place, not necessarily in terms of residential. There might be one or two. We're seeing a pretty good mixed bag of activity taking place in the downtown area at the present time.
And you mentioned healthcare as an area where LA might see some economic development.
The healthcare sector grew through the recession in terms of adding jobs, and I think that's likely to continue in part because of the aging of the population and continued growth of the region.
And are there areas where we still have a lot of work to do? You know, you said that LA had lagged behind California.
Well, the most notable area of improvement is construction. And that's true for the state as a whole. But construction jobs, which grew a little bit in 2011, aren't really expected to increase in 2012 much, if at all. We continue to see contraction in local and state government, and that includes a decline in jobs for, I believe it's the third or fourth year in a row. If I were to go back over the list that I just mentioned, I think the one that is an unsung hero of sorts is retail trade, because it is indicative of households, consumers here in California and Southern California beginning to open up their wallets and sensing that the recession, which has been so difficult for so many people, is in the past, that recovery is in the present, and that better things are up ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Kleinhans.
Okay, you're welcome, Emily.
I really appreciate it. Thank you. That was Robert Kleinhans of the Los Angeles Economic Development Corporation. Car wash workers in South LA have scored a victory. They're now among the first to be unionized in the city of Los Angeles. Los Angeles Mayor Villaraigosa and AFL-CIO President Richard Trukma celebrated the bargaining agreement this afternoon at Vermont Car Wash, one of two car washes in South LA to unionize. For years, car washes have been considered one of the most exploitive businesses, with long hours and paltry pay. As Veronica Villafania explains, the workers had a tough fight.
Until a month ago, workers at Vermont Car Wash had a lot to complain about. The owner wasn't paying us what was fair. We worked 10 hours and would get paid 5. We had no lunch breaks and wouldn't get any water to drink, says Manuel Martinez. The Salvadoran immigrant has been working at the car wash for more than 4 years. He says a group of his co-workers finally said enough and started fighting to improve their working conditions, demanding the owner pay them a fair wage.
In one occasion, all of them did a delegation to her and stopped working on a Saturday, a very busy day, and to ask her, you know, to listen to their demands.
Nady Dominguez is a legal organizer for the Clean Car Wash campaign.
And so through conversation, through actions, the community support, but most importantly, the bravery and courage of the workers to really have conviction that this was the right thing to do and stay firm and continue the fight.
Dominguez says it was this show of unity that forced owner Mi-Soo Kim, a Korean immigrant, to accept the unionization of the workers. Thanks to the contract, they will now earn $8.16 an hour, they get a 2% raise, they'll get uninterrupted lunch breaks and 2 10-minute breaks, as required by California law.
What we've also learned is that even though many owners, you know, run their own businesses, it does not mean that they are responsible owners that understand the law and understand how they should be running their business. And we've learned, interesting enough, that many of them a lot of times don't even know minimum wage laws.
Neves Car Wash on Florence and Hoover also accepted the union contract. Owner Luis Nava had been a manager at the car wash for more than 7 years and bought it from the previous owner in November of 2011.
Everybody has to, you know, the rights to make the money, the, you know, minimum wage, and they work hard. Well, we have, you know, to help them, they can help me.
The workers will now be represented by the Steelworkers Local 675. For Annenberg Radio News, Veronica Villafañe.
That's it for this Tuesday. We had help today from Anna Catherine Brigida and John Doubled. Aaron Schrank is our producer. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Emily Frost.